Welcome to the inaugural edition of WFAE Talks. I'm Greg Collard, the news director at WFAE. I'm joined by WFAE's education reporter, Lisa Miller. It's been a busy week for you so far.
It's been a good week so far. Lots of stuff going on.
Good. You happy?
It's always good to have interesting things to report on, so.
I'm glad you feel that way. And Ben Bradford, who reports about technology, the environment, and whatever else I assign him or that he assigns himself.
It's true. That's true.
Big weekend for you and the 49ers. We're talking about the San Francisco 49ers, not the UNC Charlotte 49ers.
So, oh, is it? Are they playing a big game?
Yes.
Oh,
NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I guess I just...
Ben's a big 49ers fan. He's grew up in that area, and you're and you rooted against the Panthers this weekend.
I rooted for the 49ers.
Okay.
Wearing my my Andy Lee jersey, who is the 49ers punter.
At a bar next to Bank of America Stadium.
That's right. Surrounded
gutsy.
By Panthers fans. There were two of us in Niners jerseys. We were surrounded by Panthers fans who were very, very classy. No one took affront to it. You know, they were nice. We made friends with them. You know, I bought them some drinks after.
Oh, that's classy. Very nice.
Well, you know, they let us watch with them and didn't, you know, beat us up. So okay. Appreciated it.
Okay. So here's the thinking behind this podcast. We discuss a lot of things in our news meetings and in general office banter, things going on in the news that's interesting, alarming, weird, funny, disturbing. You get the idea. Some of our conversations are intelligent and some maybe not so, but in an effort to connect more with listeners, we thought we'd share some of our conversations with you. We already have a show called Charlotte Talks, so we'll call this podcast WFAE Talks. We'll typically discuss three topics, and here's what they are today. North Carolina's third grade reading requirement called Read to Achieve is causing a lot of worry and headaches in CMS. Gas drilling companies that frack wells in North Carolina don't have to disclose the chemicals they're pumping into the ground. And topic number three, a plan to explode a highlighter pen in Charlotte. Stay tuned. We'll explain. But first, topic number one. Lisa, you attended this week's CMS board meeting where a hot topic of discussion was the third grade reading requirement. The district expects 5,000 students won't meet the new requirement and will have to participate in mandatory six-week reading camps this summer. Problem is, there's not enough money for these camps.
So this has been playing out for a while. So this legislation was approved last year, and the state has been kind of scurrying to figure out what this actually means. Because by law, kids, you know, if they don't pass either the end of grade test in reading, they're not at grade level, or they don't pass, you know, a series of tests called a portfolio, then they'll have to go to these camps. And by state law, the camps are 6 weeks long, 3 hours a day. So the state has been trying to figure out, the State Board of Education, the Department of Education has been trying to figure out how this will be implemented. So really, this week was interesting and eye-opening. I've been talking to the state people about this, but to see how it's actually beginning to play out in districts. And so CMS, you know, first, it looks like the state maybe estimated 2,300 kids would be going to this camp based on the money that CMS is getting for the camps. They're getting about $865 or so per student to run the camps. But, you know, CMS, based on tests at the beginning of the year, they gave to kids saying, we're thinking it's going to be more like 5,000 kids who need to be going to these camps. And now, of course, tests got a lot harder this year as far as some of the grading. They're more rigorous. And so, you know, when state lawmakers passed this last year, it was unclear, you know, how many kids would actually be using this, because based on the test before, it'd be 30% of third graders in the state. And based on the, you know, going off last year's results, it's, you know, about 50%.
So these are reading tests. And if they don't pass these reading tests, basically, then they have to go to summer camp so that they can get better at reading before they go into fourth grade. What was happening before?
What was happening before kids would go on to fourth grade many times. And you know, really, that's still what's going to happen. I mean, they talk about a retention label. If you don't pass the test, then you go to summer camp and you're still not passing the test, then you go on to fourth grade. but you have this third grade retention label. So that does not mean a kid is wearing this big dunce hat in the classroom.
Right.
But, you know, it means the teacher is kind of – they get more intensive reading instruction, which is a challenge, right, when you're a teacher and you have a classroom of some kids with, you know, the third grade level retention label and trying to teach to all this. But, yeah, I mean, so it's – they're still going on to fourth grade. At the end of fourth grade, if they're not reading at grade level, it's the principal's decision about what happens next.
And before – we continue this. I have a third grader in CMS school. So
disclosure.
Yes. So this is obviously something that has, I think it's fair to say, heightened interest in. But this test, this is the standard. You said this is the standard EOG test that's going to determine. So it's not just them reading and making sure they have so many, they can read so many words per minute, which I know they do judge that throughout their early on in the early grades. You get test back from teachers and they say they're reading it so many words per minute. This is just is more of a reading comprehension test?
This is the standard EOG test. Okay. But then they have this alternative, right, written into law, is that you have you can also complete a portfolio, a reading portfolio. And if you know, do 80% on this portfolio, you can go on even if you're not at grade level on the test. But basically this portfolio, it's not like what you think of with an art portfolio or something like that. It's a series of tests. And there's several tests. They're designed to test what they call different standards. And so the tests start in January and then they end in May. And, you know, CMS and a lot of other districts are saying, well, we want kids to have every shot of not going on, you know, onto fourth grade with this retention label. So we're going to put all the third graders through these tests. But Heath Morrison, the CMS superintendent, said at this week's board meeting that, look, we've basically looked at the amount of tests that we'd be giving, and 30% of their third grade reading experience would be doing this. So
we'll be taking
we
tests
wanna
and
streamline.
Prepping for tests?
We wanna streamline this. So CMS is asking the state for a lot of flexibility. They want to streamline the tests, use some tests that they've already do to monitor students in their reading. And they say, hey, look, a six-week reading camp for 3 hours a day is really hard for working parents to manage.
It's 3 hours a day or 6 hours a day?
It's 3 hours a day. So what CMS wants to do is have a three-week camp for 6 hours a day, which is more manageable for working parents, they say. You just condense all this time together.
And that's about what the time is for a traditional school day anyway, right? About 6 hours?
Roughly.
Yeah.
It's a little bit less.
Yeah,
but yeah.
So it's right. more on the school schedule. Mm-hmm. And the thinking is, you know, first, the thinking is it's more manageable for parents and it saves them on transportation costs, $250,000 in transportation costs by condensing it this way.
Because they don't have to bus people around and,
exactly.
and for 6 weeks, 3 weeks, mm-hmm. they can just do it once. Yeah.
Are they trying to scare parents into making sure their kids pass these tests so they don't have to be – they won't be hassled so much? I mean, this would be a nightmare. I mean, I think a lot of parents just logistically getting this done in the 3 hours a day.
Sure. Well, if you've already got plans for the summer and those kind of things, I mean,
just regular work
that
schedule
can be disruptive. And then, yeah, in addition to that as well.
But this is something that school board member Rhonda Lennon said it looks like this sounds like third grade hell.
Yeah. Yeah. She did not mince her words. So she kind of got at state lawmakers by saying, hey, you're handing down these mandates and, you know, it's just very hard to implement them and how they're, you know, handing out in the schoolhouse, how they're, you know, passing down to the schoolhouse, which is funny because she actually tweeted, you know, there was some tweeting exchanged during the meeting and lawmaker got back to her and said, hey, yeah, we state lawmakers want to work with you guys. We don't want it to be a huge headache to implement.
On to topic number two, gas drilling companies. A headline in the Raleigh News and Observer says North Carolina fracking panel passes chemical disclosure rule. That seems a bit misleading because the rule is that drilling companies don't have to disclose the chemicals they use to frack a gas well. Ben, why the heck not?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, chemical disclosure rules, as you can tell by the name, are super exciting. the whole thing, the Mining and Energy Commission, chemical disclosure rules, all of it. There's just a really it actually is fascinating. It sounds so boring, but it actually is fascinating. Basically, what it is right now, the state is preparing to allow fracking to come in. Right. There's been this big push to bring this kind of drilling, which has been sort of the key reason for this natural gas boom that's made energy cheap across the country. Ultimately, what they've done is they've given this group, the Mining and Energy Commission, and they've given them the task of writing all the different rules that have to go in place before these companies can come in and start drilling. Mm-hmm. Right. So basically what happened is the Mining and Energy Commission, after more than a year of studying and going back and forth on this and considering all kinds of different rules, considering very strict rules, considering kind of unconventional rules, and then they finally settled on this one that basically says that companies can keep their fluids secret. They can classify them as trade secrets, and the state does not get to look at those. So that, to your point, right, that's kind of the most basic sense, isn't disclosure. Now, there are some provisions in there that in case a spill is discovered or some kind of contamination is discovered, the agency can contact the companies and say, hey, what's in your mix? We think we've got a problem here. And then they can look at it and kind of determine if something's gone wrong.
But isn't the process in itself already affecting or contaminating water supplies in some ways? I mean, this stuff ends up in our groundwater. I mean, we've seen all the video footage of gas of water that lights on fire. I mean, isn't this stuff getting into our ground, into our groundwater anyway?
I would say, first of all, that is a very, very contentious issue, and it's not a yes or no answer. I think that, you know, there have certainly been some cases where people have found some form of contamination in water. Usually it has to do with private wells. I would say that most people, and this is going to be a little bit controversial probably, but I would say that most people say that that's not one of the bigger risks of fracking, that's a pretty rare occurrence. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is when you're drilling, you drill down way past the layer. You drill about a mile down into the ground, and that's way past the layer of the earth where water is contained, particularly our drinking water is contained.
Okay.
So usually that's not in there. And that's one of the arguments by these companies, right, saying, well, hey, listen, we shouldn't have to disclose this stuff because it's not going to affect the water, and it's a trade secret. And if we give up our secret little mix here, then other companies will know it, and that's a competitiveness concern for that. So the regulators, in this case, the Mining and Energy Commission, which is appointed by the lawmakers who are very pro-fracking, they essentially side with the companies on that. Now they have some provisions in there. They're saying basically that it's not that much of a risk, and if something does happen, and we detect that something does happen, then we'll be able to go back to the companies and.
How do we know if we don't know what's?
That is a great question. Yeah, that's absolutely the other side of it. Right? That's right. I mean, how do you detect it if you don't know what to look for? Right? Mm-hmm. It's not usually like, oh, someone's water lights on fire. Usually you find some trace chemicals somewhere, and if you don't know where to look for that, then it's going to be difficult. Now, the other side of that argument is that companies might use different levels of things, but a lot of them are basically using the same stuff. So to some degree, you do know what to look for.
Can we find out what it is anyway? I mean, are these similar rules in place where in other states where there's fracking? Where they do have to disclose?
Different states have different rules. You know, some of them, the state governments hang on to a list. You know, a lot of times, and there was some discussion about doing this here in North Carolina, that there's going to be some kind of a lockbox, to use my favorite Al Gore phrase, and basically they put the ingredients, you know, the list of ingredients in this lockbox, and then if there was some kind of concern, they would be able to do it, or like a few people would know about it.
What is the? I mean, this may seem kind of basic, but what is the sort of fracking fluid industry's argument for not keeping them in that lockbox?
Oh well, they say that basically. Once the government has it and it's out of their hands, then a number of things can happen. Usually they try to argue that there's people will get their hands on it through Freedom of Information Act requests or that it'll be they basically say that, you know, once it's out of their hands, it'll be disclosed somehow. But that's a great sure. question, because the fact of the matter is that that both federal and state laws protect trade secrets from those kinds of disclosures.
Well, on to topic number three. A highlighter pen will explode in Charlotte.
Well, possibly.
Well, not really. We're not talking in a literal sense, but that's the description that someone who works at WFAE's front desk, Megan Struble, that she used that when she saw a picture of the proposed artwork for the I-277 underpass leading to the NC Music Factory. Lisa liked that description so much that she used it in her story. Poached it, plagiarized? Is that a word? No, you didn't poach it. You didn't plagiarize.
Strike that.
The art group, which developed the NC Music Factory, basically wants to have a graffiti artist paint the underpass with multiple colors.
And then these like bright neon pastels is what you're talking about here. It looks like someone's tie-dye shirt got thrown up on the wall.
Yes, that's another
in a very geometric pattern.
Yeah, of course.
Yes,
of
course. From far away.
I wasn't criticizing. I like it. I think it looks good.
I think it's fair to say I'm not a fan, but to reach his own, I don't go by there that much anyway. But Lisa, your verdict? Do you like it?
You know, when you weighed against a gray drab underpass, yeah, it's I think it's kind of fun. Yeah.
I feel like it kind of
echoes the NC Music Factory, the vibe of that.
Uh-huh,
so.
Sure.
A bridge, a public bridge, though.
Well, it's a great way. It's a great sign that, you know, hey, NC Music Factory, we're over here. I mean, it's pretty close to the NC Music Factory anyway. But it's a smart move on the developer's part there. I mean, basically they pay for the art, mm-hmm. but it's on a public underpass, and you know they get a sign up there as well. So. The city was in favor of this. The Public Arts Commission kind of, you know, they did more just of a check off on it. And the state DOT, it's up to them to approve it or not. Now, they've already approved. We have two other NCDOT public art approved projects. We have the Johnson C. Smith, the underpass, mm-hmm. 77. It's kind of a light display. It changes. And then
it's very cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It is really cool. Tanner, who used to work here, did a real cool video on that when that came out recently. And then by the airport on Billy Graham Parkway, there's the Ascendis sculpture.
Well, that concludes our first official edition of WFA Talks. What'd you think?
Yeah.
Well, I like that we started with a ringing endorsement.
I
like how we start with some really engaging topics. You know, I think the ones that really draw listeners in. You know, the mix of ingredients in the water that goes into fracking, and how a state commission decided what was going to be in there, and then also state rules about third grade tests. So I think that we started with really engaging stuff. But
I thought you were going to say the defeat of the Carolina Panthers by the 49ers.
Listen, I'm trying not to gloat too much. All right, we got to play the Seahawks now, and that's a game. That's a game that Niners fans really. I don't want. Okay,
and we do have that rivalry in our news department too.
Yes, we do. Kevin Kniestedz from our morning edition host is from Seattle.
Who? I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. We'll end it on that note. We don't know who our morning edition host is. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.